Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Are you feeling a bit animated? Well, come on over to the Wicked Anime Podcast on the Nerdy Show Network, a bi-weekly podcast dedicated to animation, Japanese culture, and all things anime. With a true industry perspective, we're always diving deeper than school uniforms and tentacle monsters. Join us on the Wicked Anime Podcast, nerdyshow.com/wickedanime. It's Wicked A!
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. It contains content that may not be suitable for all ages, so listener discretion is advised. All Nerdy Show podcasts are made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. Discover the many ways you can join in at nerdyshow.com. All right, guys, it's Design Episode 25.
Uh-huh.
We've been doing this for over a year, can you believe it?
Yes.
Okay.
No, but yes.
So we haven't talked since we've done Max's session, right?
We've been doing this for over a year. When are we getting matching tattoos? When is that going down, guys?
We got to be real successful before that happens.
All right. I'm just saying butthole tattoos. Matching butthole tattoos.
You mean a tattoo of a butthole or a tattoo on your butthole?
On your nipple of a butthole.
Either or. It just says homebrew ombre.
I'll get a tattoo of a butthole on my butthole.
Only slightly larger.
We played Max's campaign.
Uh-huh.
First session. No combat. I'm curious. Ooh. Listeners, could you write in about the episodes with no combat? We really enjoy them because we just like bullshitting with each other. Mm. If you don't like them, we can try to make sure there's combat in every episode. But, you know, we don't really press for that kind of thing, even though that is the game we're building.
I feel like it's part of the game we're building.
Yeah.
I had planned for combat. I just planned poorly.
There was a chance for it, and it didn't happen because of decisions that were made. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Listeners, if you have thoughts about that, write in. We're interested because genuinely, like, I just played a clip of a different podcast where an episode where there was no combat of a live play podcast, and the fans complained about that episode endlessly.
And then the clip you played for me, I thought was hilarious.
That's the exact episode they were complaining about.
I was going to poop myself.
Yeah. It was quite
from laughing.
It was, well, no.
Oh, it was unrelated to the podcast?
Yeah, just unrelated to even the subject.
I was just going to poop myself, and also I love listening to that episode.
So, Max, GMing, first time, you are not an experienced GM.
Not at all. That was my first real GM experience.
So even though no combat, no numbers, well, there were some numbers. There's some dice rolling. Mm-hmm. How did it feel being at the helm, especially being recorded on one of your first times?
I enjoyed it. The world building, the creating, all of that, just bullshitting, pulling things out of my ass, I'm used to. That's what I like.
Well, you're a teacher.
Yes. The numbers is where things come in. But I feel like having the character sheet in front of me, it was very intuitive to just lay that out. And once you put the 7 or 8 numbers down, you have a character. The skeleton is there for you. You just have to put the skin on them. So it wasn't as intimidating as I feel another system would be. You lay that out, you give them their dodge, their armor, their speed, and you pretty much have a character.
Yeah. There's not... Mm-hmm. I mean, I've shared my GM notes with everybody. They're not Patreon exclusive. You can find them on our Twitter, you know, our Patreon, if anybody wants to look at...
You can just come to my house. They're there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Best spot is Liam's house. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of detail on the actual enemies and their abilities. I've just got, like, a dice for what it does, what their stats are, and then you're good to go. The rest is on you of just making it up.
And it's not because this is the system we made or I'm sucking our own dicks or anything. Like, I generally don't know how to make things. So having those numbers was very helpful.
Cool.
I have not done this before, so...
I'm interested to see that if, at the end of this, I want to hear of, if you're like, these things were the biggest sticking points for me, like, even if there's something we can't fix, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if you're like, I got most nervous when I was doing this, or I didn't have an answer for this, because we could design solutions for that, or bake them into the system, or maybe there's just things we need to be aware of, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for me, it's just pacing, trying to pick up, you know,
that is the hard, like, even when you're good, even when you're skilled, even when you feel comfortable, or even like, and you know where the story's going, mm-hmm. because you are not completely in control of what's yeah. going on, pacing is always going to be an issue. You're always going to yeah. have to wrangle stuff. And
it's like when all four of you split up and I'm like, all right, cool, we're going to create four different stories here.
It's funny because that's the next subject I want to talk about.
Yeah, it was fun. I enjoyed mm-hmm. it.
Now that we've all GM'd something where this has happened, I want to talk about splitting the party. Now, I think the main reason why there is a real big aversion to splitting the party is because the legacy of dungeon crawls.
Yes.
Right? In a dungeon crawl, you split the party. This is a pre-built adventure. In a dungeon, there are specific things waiting for you around every corner that you don't know what they are. They are immutable in the sense that they're pre-written. So splitting the party is a bad idea because everything that you're going to encounter was built for a party to interact with. That's not really everybody's experience. That's just the standard that dungeon crawls mm-hmm. have made. Having GM'd, what do you guys think about it? About managing a split party? Let's say, if you don't write everything in a dungeon to happen very specifically, the party splits, you can kind of be like, okay, well, yeah, they find it, but mm-hmm. it's yeah, I'm going to remove two of the bad guys from it. No big deal.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
I'm still just generally against in a dungeon, in a hot zone, essentially. Sure. Like, when you're going into a hot zone, I still don't want two different combats that are split up because that yeah. just that actually takes more time. Mm. But also, like, even in any of the role playing games that I like playing, I like it when the adventuring party feels like a SWAT team more than anything else.
Sure,
when they feel like this is the role I have in combat. Mm. But it's different when you're in town or when you're investigating or when you're tracking something down or yeah. you're trying to get something done, because then it feels like, I would almost say, a police procedural more than anything else.
Right.
You split up, you investigate, and you're like, this is where the coke house is. We're going to assault it. Let's do this. Like, that's the vibe, like, I've always enjoyed.
If you have, like, we had, like, a noble, and then you have bruisers, why would the noble bring these obvious murderers with him? Like, there's times when, yes, splitting makes sense. But, like, we've all been at a table where someone has a hard time paying attention. So if sure. they're not involved in a combat, they're not going to be paying attention at all, and I feel like that splits a party at the table.
Well, let's hold off on combat because I do want to talk about that. Let's talk about non-combat. So I'm not just talking about everybody's going shopping in town, because
yeah.
everybody splits the party there. That I mean, yeah. everybody's used to that. But just investigations, right? So you go into an area, so-and-so's going off to speak to these people, and these people are going off to speak to these people. I feel like it's a low-friction thing as a GM. But there are groups that I've been a part of, and I've been this person where I've been like, we better not split up, because the precedent that has been set is that there may be an encounter that has been planned for our party specifically that's going to happen at any one of these checkpoints.
Mm-hmm.
When I feel like that's maybe not the best way to GM it.
Yeah,
unless everybody's agreed that like any combat should be the hardest thing we've done so far.
I think the GM should just suck it up at that point and say, okay, your carefully laid plans need to change a little bit. Yeah. If you've laid it out like a watchmaker, then maybe you should get a new party.
Well, it also depends on the context. If you are...
No, it doesn't, Doug.
Yeah, but if
no.
you... Yes, it does. Because oh. if your party...
Max is a consequentialist.
Yeah. If your party is wanted and you're running from the law, are you really going to split up in town? You
know, maybe.
It's probably for the best. But looking
if you're in a safe house and you need supplies, it is safer to send one person if they're looking for
sure,
four.
But you would knowingly take that risk as the party. You
yeah.
say, look, we know we've been whatever. Mm-hmm. But if you go into a friendly town and you say, oh, we're going to, you know, oh, we need information, but there's no reason to, like, worry about whatever. I think if you would split up in reality, you either know you're about to take a risk and run into combat, but you're willing to take the risk because you need something desperately. Or you say, oh, this is a friendly town, we can split up and there'd be real no consequence. And if you did split up and there is a huge consequence, it would seem a little weird, like the GM is almost like punishing you.
That's what I mean, that's the GM's fault.
Or you can just, yeah, or you can just allow for like, oh, someone got captured, needs to be yeah. a rescue mission,
yeah.
we can do this
the
now.
The GM should be able to, the good GM should be able to take any situation and make it as fun as possible. If you really wanted to have this really awesome... like conflict happen or an encounter and they all decide to split and they're all going everywhere except for where you want them to go,
you can wait it out
or introduce it a different way or have one person get kidnapped and now it's a rescue, like you're saying. It's like but it depends on the story thus far.
And I do think we're fighting against the weight of almost like a case law of old RPG yeah. experiences that we and others have had, where we're like, never split the party, because What's the downside of never splitting the party? Well, things happen slower, but not really. Not at the table.
Not really.
Right? Yeah. If you never split the party, you're like, yeah, we just go there together. We go there together. We go there together. Yeah. And it still all happens. But it doesn't feel right in the same way, right? Mm-hmm. Like when we split the party in your campaign, it was appropriate. Like
it made sense.
Yeah.
I wish we went in pairs, though.
Yeah.
It's just having someone single role play with Max was great and fun, and there was a lot of funny in there. I think it's always better to have an interplay with three, to have someone to check or play straight man.
Yeah, that's something I wanted to talk about. So role play wise, there was a lot of downtime for individual players as we waited for our turn, mm-hmm. right? For the turn of like what kind of investigation they were going to do. And that's normal. I mean, I feel like there were times where it's like, oh, I can kind of check out of this because it's not really like I literally cannot influence it. My character is off doing something else that we've already established. How do you get around that as a GM? Because like we're engaged, we're in front of microphones.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're not looking at our phone. We're doing this, but other parties aren't the same. Do you skip around more? Maybe that's the answer.
I think you have to skip around, but you can't do it in pockets of less than 10 minutes. You really can't make it a 6-minute investigation session. You're not getting anywhere. And the more you break it up, the more time it takes you to get back into the rhythm, whatever you're doing.
That would have put a lot more pressure on me, I think.
Yeah. Splitting it up. See, that's where I feel like it made me more comfortable as GM. I like being like, okay, yeah, you do see that. Now we're going to cut to so-and-so. Okay. And then that gives me time to kind of try to think about it while I'm bullshitting as another character.
We did do that. But it was like in 15-minute pockets between the four.
Sure.
But I think having two pairs of two would have been better.
So maybe think of this then as a courtesy instead of as good practice for the sake of the survival of your party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like a courtesy to the GM and the other players is that if you're going to split up, bring a buddy.
And the other cool thing about that is that if you split up into two, if you're assuming a four-player game, and you have two parties of two, you can tell the players, okay, we're going to go with these two players first. You two think about what you want to say to so-and-so. And they can literally have a conversation on the side.
Yep. Yeah.
Whether that's in character or not, they can figure out what the plan is. You bullshit with the other ones, or not bullshit, but do the actual story. They learn something, but the other two are busy talking, making their plan. And when you finally regroup, they legitimately, let's say they didn't overhear what this one was. So when you're regrouping and you story-wise, you have to tell what you learned. They're actually going to be learning it. They can actually react.
And there is... It's a lot easier as a GM if you're going to do the thing where you're like, they make a decision. Okay, now while you think about that, we're going to skip back to this. It's a lot easier going between two or three groups than individual separate stories.
Well, and it's also that situation where it's very easy for two people in a conversation to get involved in a loop of misunderstanding.
Yeah.
Where it's like back, like, well, no, this thing. Like, I don't know what you, what you mean by that. And as long as there's a third person, they go like, I think you mean this.
Yeah. Or
and
do a different approach that you're not thinking of. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. As a GM, I feel like in our system, splitting the party, GMing wise, is fine because there's not really a lot of extra complexity. Our game has a very hardcore tactical element to it, but because of the momentum system, you can kind of get your way out of trouble and do all kinds of wacky stuff to kind of run away or survive a thing or get back to your party or do all these things. But like, if you're thinking about splitting the party the way we did, maybe etiquette around the table for the players is to think, can I reduce the number of things? Can I bring a buddy?
Sure.
Because it doesn't really reduce the workload on the GM as much as it does make it so that it keeps moving for the other people.
It just keeps it snappier.
Yeah.
I mean, and all that being said, when we did split up in the game,
it was fine.
It was fine. And
I had a great time listening to everybody else.
Yeah. And when I was in a scene doing my thing and I felt like I was by myself, like in a good way, where it's like, I was like, okay, I got to get some answers here. Otherwise, I'm like, my mission is, I didn't do good on my mission and I have to rely on myself and I have to be thinking quick on my feet. So instead of being like, what do you think? If I just decide to check out and let the other person take the reins for a while. So if the mood you want to put the player in is to feel cut off and isolated, then totally do that. But if you're like, nah, we need to have fun. We got to get exposition. Let's just go in groups of two.
And I really like that. I really liked yours specifically because I did feel like you're presented with very complex decisions.
Right.
Compared to the rest of us.
And like I couldn't get opinions on from anyone else.
Right.
But it's still, I was really pleased with how it all turned out.
Right. If we're watching a movie, this is how you would want all these different scenes to go.
Right.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed it, but just thinking for like, oh, this, we've got headphones on. We've got mics in front of us.
Yeah.
We are locked in, you know, which is just not the case for many groups.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I want to talk about splitting. So, okay, now let's talk about combat. I feel like combat doesn't have this problem. I feel like it's easy to split the party in combat with our system because of the way battle order works.
Maybe. I don't,
because you know, on my screen, it says the order in which the enemies go.
Sure.
I just stack them with the different people they're fighting and the party. You guys go in the same order that you're currently sitting in. And that's it. Just, yeah, if you're both in combat, boom. Okay, this person, enemy that's fighting you. Okay, now it's these guys. What do you do against this enemy? This enemy's going to do this on its turn. And then start the round again. You just keep going.
Yeah. If everybody wants to be split that bad, then the system happens. Seems like it would work.
Yeah. Whereas, because of initiative, enemies from one group are going. So, the way I've seen it done before is enemies from one group are going during the other group's turn.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And only because the GM in the moment is like, I'm just going to roll initiative for all these guys at the beginning.
Right.
So we know when everybody goes.
That even though they are separate, you treat it like it's just one big scene.
And it's wrong if they're mixed in like that. Right. You should have separated them and rolled their initiatives individually and then split the group into two. But in our system, I don't think we even have to worry about that. Shit, because that's how you...
I mean, with the other system, you're almost better off just doing each combat to its completion before moving on to the other person instead of trying to bounce back and forth.
Well, or treating them like the little instanced combats where you're like, okay, let's do initiative for you two fighting these three, and then you do it and you write it down. You go, okay, and then after all of them go, we're going to do all of these people. I feel like you got to do one group, then the other, then back to the first group, then to the other group, with the enemies being contained within that. Because it doesn't really matter that the enemy goes... If the enemy goes between two people in another group, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It should just be before those people.
Yeah. If it's that complicated, or if this combat's going to be real tough and it's going to be a long one, well, then send two of them on a bathroom break or a pizza run or whatever.
Yeah.
And then switch. And then everybody gets their chance. And then it's like, oh, how did you guys do? And then you can actually just do it. Like, I don't know, man. It just seems kind of like what's more fun at the table and like less complicated.
I think what's more fun at the table is our combat order is based on seating order. Like, you two split up, you sit next to each other.
Yeah.
Like, if you two are going to buddy up and you're going to split up, sit next to each other. Yeah. Because that's how combat's going to go.
Yeah.
I'm still iffier on it, like, purposeful split-up combat stuff.
Well, I think sometimes it just happens. They pick
the players
a fight.
If the players say, no, we are doing this, then you just roll with it.
Mm-hmm.
Literally.
Sometimes combat just happens because of something they did, and, like, everybody rolls badly, and you're like, well, it's happening now. And they're like, okay, well, they pick a fight, and now you're in it regardless, so you got to figure it out. I want to think about that, splitting the party, because I feel like our system is a little looser about stuff like that. Like, it's a little easier to do that kind of things. Because my standard for why this should be simpler, why we should think of it as something simpler, is because of Doug doing Ghostbusters Resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm dumb. It's got to be simple, because I can't do the big numbers. The calendar you made scared me. So we got to dumb it down.
I made
Doug plus one momentum.
Yeah, I made a calendar. By the way, listeners, and I will share it with this episode for everybody if they
thought it was a magic guy.
looks like a Simon board.
One, there are two calendars you get to choose from.
That's true.
You know what? You know, if you print up a big enough thing of that calendar and you put it on the wall, you'd be like, "Oh my God. Character's birthday was on Dart."
Yep.
There it is.
For sure.
Oh, shit, Black Audit.
It's a bad omen. Born on the Black Audit.
Here's the only reason that would maybe not be a great idea. The Black Audit takes up...
A lot of space.
A lot of space compared to any other date.
Well, hey, you're indoors, you know, I don't know. It's like you're indoors for the Black Audit. There's a lot of time in there.
That's a
good conception date, yes.
Yeah. I made a circular calendar, which if you're like, I'm trying to track dates, maybe not the easiest for that, but you look at it and you immediately know how the year works. There's the moment you look at it, you're like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
How the year feels going through it.
Yeah, absolutely. And like how the seasons transition and what happens and when people celebrate, that kind of thing. But then I also went to Donjon and plotted in all the numbers for when things happen with the moon phases and stuff like that. And you can look at that. I'll post that as well. And it is convoluted and large.
But making it dumb for me, and then...
Yeah, no, but...
And then pretty. I made a pretty one.
The whole thing is, it's the Donjon one is more similar to how you as a person keep track of days in your actual life, yeah. which makes it easier.
Well, it's more similar
it's
to
a skill you already have.
It's more similar to a calendar on your wall already.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is really what it is. But, well, the difference is we couldn't make the circular calendar of the way our year currently works because it doesn't work precisely that way. But okay, so I made a couple quick changes to things. I think that flame orbs need to be buffed slightly.
Okay.
For fire. I think instead of you have to share your move speed with them, they just have a move speed of 3, all of them. And you cannot start combat with more than 2 already summoned.
Sounds good.
Does that fix it? So that way, instead of describing like all the different mechanical limitations to why you can't have things, just like if you're starting combat, if combat's beginning, you can immediately reflexively summon 2. Any of the other ones you were maintaining vanish because your tension has shifted.
Well, it was a thing where like, yeah, starting with, if you could start with 5 and you just get to use
that's a nuke.
And if you allow to just add that damage on ranged attacks you already make because they just kind of hit your ride.
Yep.
Yeah, dude, that sucks. But
and they auto hit.
Yeah, and I also think it was a problem where sure that would be cool to do starting with 5, but if you all only get to move 6 squares and you have 5 up, that means you move 1 square.
Yep.
And that solves both of those problems.
So their move speed is entirely separate from yours. Each of them can move 3 squares or spaces because we're using hex. Also, invigorate, just change the language so it says you can only start combat with 1 person shielded.
Dope.
So designate them when combat begins, you can reflexively put it on them. That solved a big problem where I was trying to think of, like, how do I word the mechanics in such a way that is always true logistically based on the limitations and time limits placed on the things? And then it's like, fuck all that. Just, you can start with 1. That's it. I don't even need to get into it. You understand. Make up your own reason. I don't really want to get that far into invigorate. Mechanically, it works, and it's already got good flavor. So those are the big changes I made. Death gets now 4 different kinds of creatures that it can create.
Yes.
They all have a name that has R and V in it. So we start off with Reavers, then Raveners, Reavers are creatures that can, they have their own move speed. They're humanoid creatures, medium size, your size.
They're Zerglings.
No, they're more like
Putties.
Putties. That's, yeah. Zerglings, I think, are small.
Is it weird that you guys just said 2 nonsense words and everyone understand exactly what you're talking about?
Yeah. But they're not nonsense words.
But if you need
words
to construct additional pylons.
I know, but
pylons,
technically, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
like, even I understand what you just said.
Right.
Yeah.
They're what's the lowest form of Tyranid? Gene Stealer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think they're the most basic, but they're not the... They're scarab group things. And...
Sure. Okay, well, regardless, they are your size. They need to be person-sized. When you create them, you decide whether or not they do piercing, cutting, or
bashing
damage. And that's what they just have because it's how their limbs are built when you form them. Cool. And that's it. That's what they get when you make them. You start off with control points that we can probably rename later. But the number of control points...
Soul siphoned. Wow. Some fucking cool and metal.
Sure. But control points says it. Before we change it to something else more appropriate. But you have control points that the more control points you have, the more Reavers you can create. And you can sacrifice Reavers to create a Ravener. I'm not sure if it should be 2 or 3, but you get a control point for every step in death you take after 4th. So you start off with 2, then you get 3, 4, 5 as you progress up the path of death.
At 4, you get 2?
Yes.
Okay. I like that.
At 4, you get 2. 5, you get 3 total. Then 6, 7, 8, 9.
And a Ravener is 2?
Ravener, well, I don't know yet. That's we got to balance it, but so far, yes, that is true. So it's 1, 2, 4, 6.
It's got to be 2 because I don't want there to only be 1 option of how to use it.
Well, okay. Well, here's the other thing. We're going to balance the math around how many of one thing because I want to make sure that you can only... All right, so current steps are Reaver, which are... They just do melee damage. They move quick. And that's it. That's all they can do.
Mm-hmm.
Then Ravener is a bucket of hit points, big tank, no armor, and when it hits, it heals itself for some of the damage. That's it. So Ravener being that, it steals health.
So a flesh golem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they're all flesh golems in a sense, right?
I mean, like from Diablo, too.
Yeah, so like if you're thinking in classical undead terms, you got ghouls, which are these guys.
Yeah.
Then Flesh Golem. And then the next would be Ravager, which would deal AoE death damage. It does a magical effect, that kind of thing. And then above that is Rival, which is somebody whose spellcasting power rivals your own. And it's probably the most intelligent undead that you can summon in the game. And I want to make sure that you can only have one rival.
Yeah.
But you might be able to get two Ravagers by the end. So I'll do all the math on that. Shouldn't be too complicated.
So do you have to create each step?
Yeah.
So you create two things, kill them,
yep.
Their bodies form into the next thing.
Ooh, I yeah. like that.
Yeah, you create them and then you mash them together and
that
then
way,
they become
you
the
You can't
next
start thing. Combat with a rival or something, right?
No, you can if you have them from, if you've been building them up over time.
Okay.
But a rival, so by the time you get to step 10.
Mm-hmm. That's step 10. That would be step 10.
Yep. You have eight, you can make eight Reavers and they're not bad. That's not a bad choice.
To have eight of them, too?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Oh, I also made it so that your move action, you get an extra move action, an extra attack action to use on your turn.
Can you dress them any way you want?
If you want to put clothes on them, yeah.
Like a pirate crew?
Oh,
I put down a space for your Reavers, because the only one I've done is Reavers so far. I put down a space where you can name them.
Hmm.
They come up and it's like, this is Marvin.
Oh, because that would crush you when they
say hello, yeah. Marvin.
Marvin, no! You killed Marvin. I also made it so, hardcore rule, you get knocked unconscious, they just stop acting. They just stand in place. They if
have
people,
no input.
Yep. They
except
have,
for rivals.
They have a, yeah, except for rivals. They have
except
a dodge
for
of zero.
Rivals.
Yeah. A rival maybe is just you twice. Maybe that's, that could be.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, you knocked out my main body. I exist in two spaces. That's yeah. how this works.
I like
that's,
that too.
That's like low level Doctor Strange where you could like split yeah. yourself and shit.
Yeah. That's high-level shit, where you're literally two people at once at, yeah. at the same time. Not like a weird time travel loop mm. that you're
somewhere
careful
out
not
there,
to break.
Somewhere out there, a GM who's not listening to this just felt someone walk over their grave. Like, what? Oh, yeah. Someone's talking some shit.
Yeah. Like, someone just made my game real hard.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
the problem with Necromancy and other RPGs I've played is that it's too taxing on the player and on the GM.
Yeah.
Because you can, I mean, you can in Dungeons and Dragons and Pathfinder create a necromancer that is his own party.
Or more importantly, you can make a lich that cannot die.
Well, I think even if you don't make a lich, you can have several Draco liches as
yeah.
your thralls and just sit back and drink sweet tea, you know, like the entire time.
Could it be unsweet?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, unsweet. But with sweetener, right?
Delicious.
Gross.
I just want unsweet, please.
Teabag and water. That's all I want.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So those are the big changes I've made and I'm going to release with the next rulebook that comes out, which will be very soon.
I wanted to add one more thing about Max's game.
Oh, yeah, please.
The only critique I have is I think part of the pacing is using momentum as a reward in the moment.
Yeah.
To keep like, oh, that was a good thing. Or like, I'm on the right path. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice carrot on a stick of like,
yeah.
Yes.
Now, Liam struggled with this at the beginning. I struggled with it at the beginning. Mm-hmm. You are now in the hot seat.
Yeah.
Where we're like, you got to remember to do that because it took us a while to be like, oh, plus one momentum.
Yeah, you, just yeah, that is the hardest because like I'm enjoying the hell out of what you guys are doing and just forgetting to reward you.
Yeah, the rewarding is important because it encourages that behavior, which is – it makes it more fun for you as the GM.
I'm just like sitting there watching a movie and then I'm forgetting that I'm
– that you're, that you're technically something. The director.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Because we have microphones, there is a weird thing that you can – like you don't even have to interrupt them. Mm-hmm. They could be doing a thing and you can just lean forward and go, plus one momentum. And they'll hear it and they go, okay, well, anyway. And like, and they just keep going.
But it was weird as the dude who just got done GMing. And I've been having this problem in my real life where every once in a while Doug would say something and I would immediately just like reflexively, oh, I'm not.
It's not your job anymore.
I give people moments. I know that Liam and I
do it in real life.
Yeah,
I do it in real life now.
I raise a finger like plus one. Oh, plus one momentum.
I've done it to Tony twice.
Are we the real Wild Stallions?
What?
Bringing...
change society through momentum.
Oh,
by being excellent to each other.
Yeah,
the concept of just giving momentum to people in real life
or chaos points.
Oof.
Yeah, give your boss a chaos point. You're like, fuck up my day once in a while. Here you go.
Yeah,
it's like that's the currency of the future is like how much momentum you have.
Yep.
Yeah.
So social currency. So the currency of the past. Great. Yeah. Awesome.
He's like, your boss comes in.
China's
like,
already working on that.
Fuck it. It's Wednesday. I'm buying lunch, and you're like, chaos point.
All right. I'm ready to work a double whenever you roll that chaos die. Yeah. All right. I want to give everybody here homework before our next design episode.
Just what I'm here for.
Yep.
Calendars and homework.
Doug, I don't know if you know this. This is a homework podcast.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if you know this. There's so much math we have to do. Yeah,
right. This was the group project. I'm the guy who didn't do it.
Yeah.
And you guys get the A.
I think you'll like this homework.
Okay.
We're the homework hombres, Doug.
Yeah. Homework hombres.
Nerds.
Yes, nerds, Doug. We are in fact nerds.
Wait. We like homework.
Hold on, are you all nerds? Mm-hmm. Oh shit, what have I got myself into?
Yeah. Doug, you just wipe your eyes and you realize where you are and you
yesterday,
leave.
Yesterday we had a 20-minute conversation about Ichi the Killer. Yeah, we're nerds.
I like Scratchy the Killer.
Negative one momentum.
Here's the homework. Before our next design episode, I want three things from each of you. I want a monster, I want an artifact, and I want either a ritual with its components and the time it takes to do it and what entails, obviously.
The ritual.
Yeah, the ritual, the full ritual, or a potion, same criteria. So monster, artifact, ritual, or potion.
Could the artifact be a limited use artifact?
Yes.
Okay.
It can be whatever your heart desires. Here's some constraints.
Yes.
I don't want anything that just gives plus one to a single thing. I'm not interested in that. The way we're scaling our game is not going to be based around the fact that you get a plus six sword. It's going to be around, oh, I've got a sword that if somebody does this kind of thing or somebody insults me, it gives me a bonus. Stuff like that. Like, if it's a weapon.
I feel like this isn't like standard magical weapon stuff either. This isn't like, oh, this one does wind damage or whatever. Like, this is like we're talking about the special shit.
You're
the
finding
good
shit. Well, you're finding shit buried for 1,000 civilizations, you're finding an artifact. What does that artifact do that's useful? It could be, its intended use could be something completely different for that society. I want what the characters will perceive it as. So it could have a secondary side effect that are like, oh, that's weird, but it's not relevant to me, but it happens every time. They only care about the thing that benefits them.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have cursed artifacts, like, or potions that, you know, have negative side effects, that kind of thing.
Any idea on limitations of monsters?
Nope. You can make it as powerful or as weak as you want. But the constraint of monsters is it has to fit within our current lore.
Well, and also, you're probably not making hard numbers for the monsters. You're thinking, like...
concept.
I want the abilities it can do.
Yeah.
Like, how it interacts. I don't need the numbers. We can balance the numbers later. You could say it's heavily armored instead of giving me an armor number.
Yeah.
Cool.
But because it's heavily armored, it's... slow, or it's like, or it's fast and heavily armored, but that means it's you know, there's not a lot of room for internal organs in it, so it doesn't have a lot of HP.
I want a detailed description. You don't have to write it down. Just give me the feeling of it. I want to know what it is. I want the description of it. I want what it will do in combat and why, and I want information about its surroundings or how somebody would encounter it. And potion and ritual, I think, are pretty close to each other in terms of what it takes to make it. Oh, and for potions, this is already part of rituals, but for potions, I want how you ingest it. because I don't think that's not normal across the board. You're not popping a cork and drinking every potion. You might be crushing it in your fist. You might be inhaling it. You might be doing all these different things.
You might be squirting in your eye.
Yeah. Like what in Cowboy Bebop? What was that stuff called?
Red Eye.
Between your toes.
I really want to get on to... We got to name these four quarters because we haven't done it yet. So
I think we need to name every one of them.
There's four of them.
Every
day. We need... Every day needs a name. Let's do it.
Unique name.
So instead of doing that, let's name these four quarters. Do you want to start with winter into spring?
Yes. Before this conversation, should they all be connected? Should they feel like a cycle?
I don't know. Do we name them literal things? Or do we name them into references within the world?
Ooh. Both?
Because, well, if this is going to be universal, I feel like it should be with...
Kind of literal.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I feel like we could go back into the lore we've already established. So, like, when was the Pillar of Heaven defeated in legend?
You know, that's what I was gonna say.
Like, the Heaven's Army.
What if it's a calendar they use, but they don't really understand...
Right.
Where it came from. Like,
or I mean, they could understand, but it's based on legends that are just
so far gone.
They're so old, yeah.
The rabbit and the duck.
I like that.
That's what we have for False Bags and Drakewing.
Yeah, but the whole thing is I like that for holidays, but I feel like the seasons are much more agrarian, much more functional.
Yeah, you got to plan your life around that shit.
Yeah.
You know?
We could call fall into winter like Pillars Fall.
I still think it would be like... harvest, planting seeds, growth.
Yeah, okay. So fall, I think, is it would be fall less harvest or is that... summer harvest?
Fall is harvest.
Fall, yeah. Fall into winter would be harvest.
Okay, so fall in, or summer into fall would is be harvest.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's a way we can talk about harvest that's just not literally calling harvest season?
The reaving, you know? Or something? Reaping?
Reaping, reaving. There's the secondary connotation to those things that means death, which is not what we're going for.
The storing.
That's a good idea. Something with storing.
Yeah, storing.
Stocking.
Gathering season or
preparation.
I like stocking.
Yeah, I've heard that about you. I've read it in your restraining orders.
Which number in exactly three?
We call it red stock.
Red stock, I like that.
Cool.
Okay, red stock it is.
Thanks for coming to my red stock.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's when's your birthday? It's on 72 Red Stock.
Red Stock 99 is a bad one, though. We should just
there
skip
is no
that
99.
Day. Good, because I didn't like that.
I think instead of stock, something similar.
Red Fall or Red
Red Store.
Red Harvest. Red Store. Red Harvest sounds like you're murdering people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like Blue Harvest.
Red Hold.
Red Set, like sunset.
We call it Red Moot. Because, like, everybody's coming together.
Yeah.
Okay.
That kind of
thing. I like
that. Red moot.
Red moot. Cool.
Now, from fall into winter.
Blue hold,
I like. So you're really, like, battering things down.
Yeah, but also, like, the worst part of winter isn't in fall going into winter. That is not, like, January and February is the worst part of winter.
Blue hold, I really like, but I think we got to change hold only because hold means a place.
Mm-hmm.
In fantasy, which is what we're doing, right?
Like, okay.
You know, you go to a place. I really like the way it sounds, though.
Blue stop, see. Settle. Blue.
Do you want colors in the names of each
yes.
of these things?
I think good.
Blue straveler.
I like the idea of using colors in
Huck
all
off.
Of them.
Blue weight, blue.
We call it blue hook. And it brings you back.
I only want a blue with you.
Blue sweet.
That's Hootie and the Bluefish.
Looney and the Hoofish? That's a fucking Dr. Seuss.
Write that down, but that's going in the wiki.
Looney and the Hoofish.
Let's look at Reconcile, right? Because you're moving towards the Black Audit. So Drakewing is the reconciliation, and mm-hmm. the Black Audit is when you take stock of everything. So you're really prepping. Like, this is like, get ready. Shit's coming. Like, it's winter is coming. You're the full-on, you're the Starks in this month.
Doesn't go with blue.
What is the night is dark and full of terrors, or as DMX put it, it's dark and hell is hot.
God damn, that's
the best name for a rap album ever. Yes, I agree.
No, that is the best, one of the best names of a rap album, sure. But also, if it was a black metal album, I would also be like, yes, tight.
Yeah. Right.
It's a great
album name.
It works for a lot of things.
Is gangster rap just the metal of rap?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Definitely.
Okay. Yeah. I like Blue Hold, but it's
yeah.
Like I said, it makes me think of a Castle Blue Hold, you know.
Blue Store.
I like Dwindle.
Blue Dwindle.
Or just...
The Dwindle, actually, is I like dwindle.
Or dwindling.
Yeah, the dwindling.
It's only day 42 of the dwindling. Get your shit together.
Yeah.
Some fucking Tiktani.
I'm going to fiddle all during the dwindling.
Another Tiktani is like, you can't fiddle all dwindling.
Yeah.
You should start acting like it's still Red Moot. All right. Yeah, because you got Red Moot, then Drake Wing, where you celebrate and like reconcile.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you experience the 90 days of the dwindling. And then you get the Black Audit in the middle of that shit. And then after the Black Audit, it's like, all right, things are going to get slightly better now.
Only slightly.
Yeah. The sun's going to be out more. Flowers are going to bloom at the end of this.
At the end of the dwindling?
No.
No, the next thing.
The next one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but this is the worst part of winter.
It begins at the worst part of winter and ends in summer.
Oh, it ends? It encompasses all of spring?
No, it's winter and spring. I was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like when False Bags rolls around, which is the next holiday. It's the spring equinox.
False Bags, I fucking forgot.
Yeah.
Doug, say what you want. I love it.
No, it's good. I do like False Bags. I do. Yeah.
Yeah. When False Bags rolls around, there are flowers everywhere.
Yeah. But it starts off in the the hungriest part of winter.
Yeah, some kind of rise or crest.
Green.
Or,
green.
Crescendo.
Oh, green.
Renewal.
Green's got to be for summer, though.
We could base it on song. Like you're coming out of a sad song into a good song.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, drop the beat.
Overture.
Bass drop. Trap remix.
Dirge.
Turn.
Bridge.
Some kind of rise.
Crescendo was a good one.
Mm-hmm. Escalation, upsurge, apex, ascension, culmination, elevation, intensification.
Or like peak, like the emerging pinnacle, or
calling.
Zenith.
Calling, I like. Culling. Because if you're looking for the most extreme.
You're saying turn?
Yeah, because if you're looking at the most extreme change, I think winter to spring is the most extreme. Like everything else feels a little more timid.
Gradual or whatever.
And, yeah.
Should it be about snow melting?
Snow melt?
The melting.
We call it snow melt.
But there's places where there's not going to be any snow, and they can call the thawing or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, I mean, I would want to call it flowering, but that's at the end.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's a good half of it. You're calling it the flowering. You're like, I'm
still
buried under 20 feet of snow.
The change, the turn, this is the pivot.
Colorado is still under snow right now, and we're
not.
But we still call it winter, even though Florida... Mm. We just sit around with fucking 100 degrees.
The bisect?
I like the idea. If we focus on the imagery of snowmelt, right? Like, that's the sun is appearing more often.
The dampening?
They got the dwindling and the dampening. I don't think dampening really sells what they're going for there.
It's a little damp.
Well, we know that the sun rests in crux and then starts moving further and further across the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Is the rising just the rising season?
Elongation. Maybe the gain, because you feel like you're getting more time in the day.
I'm trying to think of something that sounds good. So, like, hymn, which is like a song. What do people sing? What's the opposite of a lament? Right? Like, not canticle.
Jig?
Maybe we could say, like, risaria, right? Like, the rising of the aria.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, yeah.
The paean?
Yeah. How do you pronounce it? Is it paean or is it pain?
I don't know. It's that A-E.
Yeah. The idea of like a rising chorus, right? Like a crescendo or a
crest,
prologue.
I'm gonna listen. Here's how you pronounce pan. Peeing.
Peeing.
I'm not happy.
I'm peeing your mom.
She would not be happy.
I still like Rosaria because it's made up word.
Rosaria.
Rosaria.
Rosaria. Let's do it.
I mean, well, I'm open to better things, but
yeah, I'm gonna write it down. But it's R I S A R I A. Rosaria.
Dawson.
Yeah, Rosaria Dawson. So we've got the Red Moot, dwindling, Rosaria, and now we need spring to summer. We're getting to the sun is in its full glory.
Yeah.
It's hot.
The sweating.
It's going into the basking.
Yeah.
The preheating.
The parboiling.
This is the heating. This is the hottest part of the year.
The cooking.
Again, we're thinking Floridian. This is for everyone else. This is their favorite time of year.
Yeah. Where people start just spending more time outside generally.
Yeah,
something blossoming.
Something to do with travel, with spending time outdoors.
This would also be prime warring season. This would be campaign season.
Sun's out, guns out.
literal guns. I kind of like glow.
Glow sounds soft, though. Like it's yeah. Like that would be like fall almost.
Brightburn, like that movie that just came out.
No,
I liked it.
Or Cloverfield.
Field glow.
It could be like Swordshine or something because people are warring at this time.
I like Swordshine.
Swordshine, I like.
We go with Swordshine.
Swordshine's violent, but it's fine.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do Swordshine. So, okay, beginning of the year begins on Black Audit, which makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
The year ends, mm-hmm. you take audit. Begins one of Rosaria. 90 days of that. Rosaria ends. You do false bags. You're like, we made it through the winter. Here's a joke, you fucker.
Hey, I had this left over from the Black Audit. Why don't you open up and take a look? It's for you. Ha! It's a turd.
So you shit in a bag at the beginning.
I shat all through the Black Audit into this bag.
No, of course it's not a turd this time. It's 10 pounds. It can't be a turd. You idiot.
It's 10 pounds of turd.
But some people put good stuff in there. They'd be like, oh no, I actually put it. No, surprise. We actually had some leftover food this time.
Leftover after I was done with it. You get what I'm saying?
There's Dairon underneath all the turds.
You made it through a hard, dark winter, and you're playing a prank on some asshole. So it just
don't
sounds...
go to Maryland during false bags.
Yeah.
Hey, we're Gelt over here.
All right. So then false bags into Swordshine, and then the height of summer is the basking. And then once the basking is over, the day of luxuriating in the sun, Red Moot begins. And you are getting your harvest.
Yes.
The trees are starting to turn orange. You're getting everything there. Drakewing, you reconcile with everybody.
For years, you locked in a house with them for all of winter.
I 7 months.
The thing about Redmoot after Swordshine, you're talking about the sun being out. It's really bright. It's also time for combat. Redmoot is like the cleanup after the fucking
battle. Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah, right. And then Drake got to settle it. Reconciling.
Yeah,
we
got to settle that shit.
Like, yeah, it was like, we have to make at least a winter peace treaty.
Yeah.
Because no one wants to fight in winter. No one wants to fight in winter.
And then when that's over, the dwindling. Like, everybody's just preparing. Yep.
So we're making it, there can't be any combat except in Swordshine,
No,
there's combat.
There's combat, but it's just classic.
Traditionally...
I don't think we should do
that. Yeah, well, the whole thing is, people do that, but no nation wages a war through harvest and winter.
Yeah,
because it just is dumb. It's a dumb thing to do.
You don't fight whatever Russia is during the dwindling.
Unless you're the Mongols.
Our game needs more hard limitations on players, I feel like.
Yes, that's totally true. In a role-playing game. Yeah, that's perfect, Max. You're the best person.
And I'm sure each culture has its different
people
point
are already upset you can't be cyborgs yet.
Really?
No, I'm just thinking that.
What?
I mean,
I was like, we could fix that right now.
Yeah, you can be.
If your GM allows it, it's canon. Like, I don't give a shit.
You could be a canon.
Plus one momentum, Max. Okay, so I want to make a couple rituals real quick.
All right.
Let's start easy. Animal messenger.
I think you have to split open an animal that you want to talk to.
Yeah. Totally agreed. I think the animal messenger is the spirit of the animal that you've slain.
You need his vocal cords.
What do you have to do, and how long does it take? Maybe it takes 30 minutes. To do the ritual. You need to get an animal capable of vocalizing, so it needs to be... And it doesn't reach your target faster than that animal can move.
So a bird, most likely, right?
You're probably going to use a bird. Or a fish.
Oh, yeah, fish would be good.
But fish can't vocalize, so probably not.
Do we really want it to have to vocalize? Because then that's very limiting to bird. Like, you're not using a squirrel at that point.
Squirrels can vocalize.
They go, wee!
Yeah.
But then if you're at sea, you can't use a fish.
You can use a bird.
There's birds everywhere.
If you're far out enough at sea, there's
not,
there's not
a lot of birds far out.
Nope. Well, I guess maybe that's your...
Catch a fucking dolphin or some shit.
Yeah. Yeah, dolphins are out at sea.
Or it's true.
You got to kill a dolphin just to say, we're going to be running late. Just tell the message, we're going to be running late. Kill a fucking dolphin.
No.
That's the limiter, right?
Or,
like, the fact that it is a sacrifice.
Or more importantly, if you had that and you had a mage on your ship, you just keep a couple birds with you.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, carry your pigeons.
We kill dolphins for tuna fish sandwiches.
Okay, so here's a legit question.
We kill so many dolphins for that.
Here's a question. Why would you kill a bird to send a message when carrier pigeons exist?
They might not make it across the whole sea.
Yeah, you need like...
This is like guaranteed...
This is a spirit.
This is like Federal Express guaranteed delivery.
Yeah, because nothing can stop it. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's... Yeah, nothing can stop an animal messenger.
It's a spirit.
Yeah, it's a spirit. People can see it.
Yeah.
So you flying, can, so that's a risk.
Yeah, so it's like it's a spirit message or something.
Yeah. But it only can move at the animal's method of locomotion. It has to be an animal capable of vocalizing, and it's only going to repeat what you say to it exactly. Maybe it takes 30 minutes. Do you need to spend anything? I think you need to dismember the animal and, like, set its remains out. in front of you.
I think you need a connection to it, so you need whoever speaks the message,
mm-hmm.
their blood. Just a little bit.
Oh, mix it with the animal's blood?
Yeah, you need a little bit of your own.
Would it be, so maybe you take like a d6 of damage or something?
I would even say one damage. Like, you're cutting your hand open a little. Mm-hmm. You're not doing a whole lot.
It's getting I was going to say, if you want to have it tied to, like, you have to be tied to it, the person who killed the animal is the one who has to say the message.
I think that's definitely part of it. Yes.
Like that then, because if you're like the dumb one, you know, who like, but you're good at hunting, but you're dumb.
Also, out of combat, like,
just read this to yeah. the bird.
Mm. Outside of combat, we heal unnecessary points so fast, so frivolously. Yeah. I don't even want to have to think about
be
it.
Be damaged, yeah.
Yeah, like, so, it doesn't matter. But so you have to cut yourself. You have to give blood. Mm-hmm. And you have to be the one that speaks it. But we don't have to have a damage mechanic for that.
Okay.
Because you could prick your finger and, like...
Maybe we could make it take... The prep takes 30 minutes, but you can speak the message at any point. So if combat... If you're doing it and combat begins, you still have to take that D6 of damage.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Because you can make it come off in combat, just in case.
And you could do this to hostages, right?
Are they going to walk there? I'm dead. That's your message.
Yeah. Like
a naked corpse.
I'm actually going to say things that are too smart.
I thought it's just a spirit that goes. It's not like a walking corpse.
Right.
Like,
it has to be an animal. It can't be a sentient.
I was thinking it'd be cool if, like, it was like a dude's brother and you kill him and send him a message like
with his spirit.
Yeah.
Well, I think this soul has bitch. To be weak for this to be.
Yeah. You have to be able to dominate it with your spirit through your blood.
It would just be great just if you. He killed a bird, and he sent it, like, do this whole ritual. It goes and talks to the king, says, "You're a bitch!" And then dies. Like, it's just, like, did all that effort.
Would we not do that?
We would, though. That's
so let's talk about limitations, right?
Yeah.
People can see its trajectory if it flies. They can follow it, so they know the direction roughly it came from, because it goes straight there, in the shortest possible path.
You have to speak bird.
It cannot go through objects because it thinks it's still alive for the purpose of this message.
Okay.
Sure.
What's the difficulty? Because you can fail to do this correctly, right? This is a complex thing.
You just have a fucking pile of birds. I'm going to get this right.
So let's think, if you're a wizard...
I think this is a fairly medium, though.
If you have an intellect of 4 and your profession is wizard or sorcerer or something...
This should be
that you get
pretty
a plus,
banal.
You get a plus 9 to this roll.
So 15?
I was thinking 13. Okay. Because you can still fail it, right? But other people can still attempt it.
I'm still saying 15.
15 is pretty high because we're going to get into shit that's way more
difficult. I'm just saying plus 9, you roll a d20. What do you have to roll to fail?
You have to roll a 1 or a 2.
But that's if you're a wizard with a plus 9.
No, that's with a 13 is you roll a 1
okay.
or 2. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or no, 1, 2, or 3, you fail with a wizard with a plus 9. I think that's fine because you've dedicated everything to this.
All right. 13 right? sounds fine.
Yeah, this should be something.
This, I think, is Bush League.
Yeah.
Okay. False face.
Disguise or whatever.
Mm. Now, does it make you look different, or does it make people perceive you as different?
Perceive.
It's like an aura around you that makes you appear as somebody else?
Yes.
Or is it something to your body?
I think it depends on what you want to do.
Physical change would be a... If we're doing... I think there should be two levels. We're going
full witchy on this. Yes. is what I'm saying. Like, mm-hmm. do you have to actually take their face off? Do you have to have? Okay, what if it's not that person's face, but you have to have somebody's face? You have to have taken somebody's face off their body.
I already think this needs to be two things. One should be an illusion where you appear to a group of people in a certain area as that, and then the other one is you make a physical change, and then the rules for the illusion is. You better not walk past a mirror because it doesn't work on objects. And in the mirror, you look like you.
Yeah.
That's illusion. I think also the illusion one, they're both illusion. Mm-hmm. But the one where...
Well, one of them is not illusion. That is transformation.
No. Right. But you're not actually that person is the illusion.
Yeah, but there's an actual physical change that you're making.
It's a magical disguise. The other one is other people's perception. I think it's very time limited. Right?
Yeah.
That's a good
But it's thing. Not just face. It's mannerism... accent, like there's things that would need to for you to blend in.
But I think that's on you.
That's
we can do something further past that, like a secondary ritual for that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the one where you actually use a face, you get those for free.
Yeah. Because like if I'm wearing Doug's face and I just walk up, I'm like, "Hey guys, how's it going?" You're like,
people are
gonna
scream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if I wear Doug's face and I come in, I'm
my
like,
face
"Hey guys, it's me, Doug."
Doug,
and like, "Hey,
you're
Doug,
a beautiful man, and I will not hear that shit from you."
Okay, so let's do two then.
There should be illusionary disguise and false face.
So let's do, we'll just call that one glamour.
Glamour I like.
But let's do false face, the one where you wear a sentient creature's face. You have to cut their face off, put it on your face while it's still wet, and it will meld into your face for a number of days.
Cool.
1d4 days?
Yes.
It maybe grants a bonus to your composure checks to appearing as that person, period. Like, you take on their mannerisms, their mode of speech. It doesn't change your height. Doesn't change your body shape. So it's on you to get that part correct.
Yeah.
But it increases your bonus to beat their checks against that thing by 5.
Oh, and I would say unless they have a reason they would not check, too.
Well,
that would be another situation.
Well, most people just wouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then somebody who would, who'd be extra scrutineer, you get an extra 5 to those checks. I think that's false face. What's the difficulty of doing that ritual correctly? I think it's tougher than
that's got to be hard.
Yeah.
Because that's some bloody shit. Like, you're
Full
witchy.
I'm saying 20. You can't, as a novice, you cannot pull it off.
I agree.
You cannot pull it off as a novice.
20.
Yeah.
No, you can pull it off as a novice. Oh, you mean if you have 4 intellect, but you're not a wizard, you can still get it. You could roll a 24.
Yeah, you can roll a 24, but that means you did everything damn near perfect.
Now, here's the thing we've talked about. You cannot do rituals you haven't discovered.
Yeah.
In our system. Because they're not tied to your path or your class or whatever you're on.
Yeah.
You have to find them and learn them and do them correctly.
Yeah.
So once you get a ritual, your group gets the ritual.
Yeah.
Anybody can attempt it. And any ritual can be cast on any... So, like, for instance, if I learn the ritual False Face and I'm the wizard, I can use it on a different member of our party.
Mm-hmm.
But...
I'm just saying, if you have a party of non-spellcasters, no one has arcane anything or ritual casting, and you find this ritual, you better roll good to even...
Spend momentum.
Think about it. Yeah.
I just see, like...
Whereas like, 20, if you are... You know, a ritual caster, and you've got extra shit, and you did some stuff where you're like, I can do this. I've set up everything well enough where I can, I'm pretty confident.
What's the cost of this? You put it on and you fail the cost. Do you take composure damage for a number of days?
Yeah, you're disfigured.
Because it burns you.
And you're disfigured, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I just see a couple champions, a bunch of cut off faces. Like,
there should be consequences like that, but at the table, you're going to know you fucked up based on how you roll.
No, but that's the thing. Like, you know you're risking it. You're like, okay, I rolled poorly. I take damage, and now any composure checks I make, I take a -4 to.
So I'm saying, like, so you do the whole ritual, it looks totally fine, you put it on your face, and then your face gets fucked up?
No.
Part of the ritual is bonding this to your face. Yeah.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah, and then, like you the know the moment... Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The moment it fails, you take that.
Yeah.
Effect on you, and it's for the same number of days, a d4
gotcha,
of days.
Gotcha.
That you take this negative, so it's risky. Like, you want to spend momentum. I like that. I like false face. Okay, so that's 2.
Let's talk about some of the mechanics of glamour.
So glamour, I don't feel like there's a negative, but maybe there's a cooldown.
Yeah, you can't just do it all the time.
Right.
Here's a question, because what glamour can do or not do, and what the false face can do or not do. If you're a guff and you want to. Let's say you're all guff party, and one of you wants to
You could
to
change
be,
your height. You could do all that stuff.
Right. Like, you could say, okay, well, I'm going to appear to be Tectani or whatever. Mm-hmm. But with the false face, if you're Tectani and you put on a Tolden face, I don't know if anyone's going to buy it.
They will if you keep everything covered other than that.
Yeah.
Right.
If you wear gloves, if you... Right.
Yeah. So maybe false face makes you appear to be somebody else just on your face... But it's to everybody who looks at you.
Yeah.
And you...
But you also
take on their mannerisms and their mode of speech. Yeah. It buys it.
So it's more convincing if you're a Tectani trying to be a Tectani, you put a Tectani face on your face.
Yeah.
But if you're a Tolden and you're like, fuck, there's a Tectani general who's leading the bad guys, I'm going to put on this big coat and give me that Tectani face.
I'm just going to pretend to be a Tectani that's more my size and shape. Like, I'm going to look like an ant.
Or I'll get stilts, or I'll put on armor, or I'll do whatever. Mm-hmm.
But you have their mannerisms, you've got everything. It has to be a known person.
Yes, whereas the glamour, you could be like, I'm guff, I'm going to be a Tolden because it's magic and they can see whatever they want to see.
But you don't get their mannerisms, you don't get their mode of speech. Right. It's just passive.
It's just appearance, and I do want to make it like very clear, reflections in swords or
magic,
jewelry or mirrors, that doesn't, as soon as it's not...
It's an illusion.
As soon as it's not light directly going from that thing to your eye as soon as there's something in between, or even looking through glass, something that distorts that light, you're fucked. You're done.
Okay, so you want to do a glamour. Let's talk about the witchy shit you got to do. Because the false face, you have to steal somebody's face and do a ritual. That's some witchy shit. Well, let's talk about the glamour. What's it take to do a glamour? Do you need to gather like?
It's going
to
depend on how many people need to see it, or if it's just one person.
I think it's just passive, no matter what. Like
passive, no matter what.
Yeah, and it's limited by a number of hours.
Yeah.
So maybe a D6 of hours.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like that.
It's a D6 of hours of how long it lasts, and you can. What kind of you need a mirror?
Yes.
And you need to break it as part of the ritual.
And you need.
It needs to be a mirror the size of your own head. How about that? That'll limit it. Yeah. So it's not like somebody picks up a compact.
Yeah. But also, I think there needs to be luxury items like sacrificed.
So like makeup.
Like
magic.
I'm thinking
makeup.
Like olive oil.
Sacrificing
incenses.
Sacrificing a mirror that's relatively of a big size is already like hard enough to get and then sacrifice.
Yeah. But, I like the idea that you have to sacrifice a mirror. But what's the actual. Let's say you sacrifice a mirror. What do you have to do? You have to do a ritual that takes an hour? Because I feel like false face is a shorter ritual, but it's gross. Yeah.
It's intense.
Yeah.
And high risk.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, what's the worst case scenario for not doing glamour right? You just wasted your time, you know?
Well, you can't try it again for 2 days.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that could work. It's a 48-hour cooldown on trying it.
Yes.
And you wasted a mirror.
Yeah.
Plus 7 years bad luck.
Yeah. Well, we know that's passive. We'll add that in as a condition. Okay.
Also, if you do fuck up, I think for the hours, you should also take composure negatives, because you just look like you're just difficult to look at. You're just like, gives you a like, you just look like you look like a JPEG artifact. You're just hard. You're just like, ow.
I don't know if I want. I think the negative of glamour should be a cooldown.
All right.
You know what I mean? Because like
it's a lower risk,
and it's situation. Like you're like, okay, well, we're gonna do this. We've only got 2 days to do it, and if you fuck it up, you're like, well, now we just can't do that option anymore.
Or we have to pick someone else to do it at the party.
We only have one mirror.
It's like Mission Impossible, and that mask machine broke. And you're like, all right, well, we got to pretend that your real face is the contact. What if I don't look anything like him? Fuck it.
You need maybe you have to break a mirror with a clear prism.
I like that too.
Something like that. Like you have to get a piece of crystal and break a mirror with it, and while saying some words.
And a clear prism can be a standard wizard tool of some kind, like you have it on a staff.
And you also definitely need
the hilt of a dagger or something.
Yeah,
you can't use you need to know what the person looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You need to be aware of the.
Yeah, and you can. Well, actually.
Maybe you could
false
make a face.
False face is a specific person.
Yeah.
You can use somebody, like if I can cut off a Tiktani's face, this is fucking witchy shit, but I can cut off a Tiktani's face, put it on and become a guff.
Yeah.
But I'm becoming a specific guff.
Yes.
Because I need their mannerisms and everything like that.
Yeah.
But glamour, I'm just becoming somebody who I'm not. So you decide how much detail you want to give. What's the difficulty of glamour? I think it's higher difficulty because the conditions are simpler. So maybe I think 15 on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so 15, lower risk. You just need a mirror the size of your head.
Mm-hmm.
We call
it
that?
And the magical instrument to break it.
Right. You need to break it with a clear prism.
Yeah.
So we need to start dispersing like ritual scrolls and shit out, right?
I think
that
you can read them.
Yeah. Part of our loot, though,
in
general.
Yeah. Well, we need a library of them first. So we've just come up with three. We came up with Animal Messenger, False Face, and Glamour. We each have homework to come up with.
Other rituals
or a potion, same thing. It needs a specific cooldown, so that the length of recharge is important.
I think one of the things to hold in your mind when thinking about potions, think about drugs, and I don't mean illicit drugs, but also just like pharmaceuticals.
Mm-hmm.
There are positives and negatives, and some of the negatives are not worth the positives, or sometimes they are.
Or maybe the positives are all great, but it takes weeks to make enough for one person, you know. Or maybe the method of delivery is, you know, you have to damage yourself to get the benefit.
I like the idea that
it's very temporary.
Ritual magic and potions are magic that don't work like magic. There's a process to them. Body magic is magic that works like magic. It's just there.
Just a really big suppository.
You take damage.
God, no. Make a suppository potion. Boop.
All right, Morty, listen. You take this and you shove it way up your butthole. Okay, everybody. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We made some real progress in this one. I feel good about it. We named our shit. We got some rituals, and we got a lot further to go. Next time you hear from us, you're going to hear about some artifacts, some rituals, some potions, and some monsters. So we're excited. We're playing Max's campaign. I promise you're going to enjoy it. So far, it's been a lot of fun for us.
You get to listen to the end of my campaign, and I promise you, Doug dies.
Which is funny, because one of the rituals we used...
I'm alive right now.
One of the rituals we used brought him back. Yeah. So, as always, you can reach out to us on our Patreon at patreon.com/RPGFS. That is the easiest way and fastest way to interact with all of us. But we're also on Twitter. Liam, what's our Twitter handle?
Our Twitter handle is at homebrewhombres.
We're on facebook.com/RPGFS.
And we're also on Instagram at RPG From Scratch, but it's all one word.
So thank you, everybody, for listening. If you're into this podcast, if you enjoy it, please rate and review us on iTunes and on Podchaser. All that stuff really helps us jump up in the rankings, and we need more ears. If you want to play this game, the best way to make sure that you get to is to tell everybody you know about it. We're working very hard making the game that we want to play and that we think that other people like us want to play.
And if you also are writing erotic fan fiction about the characters in our RPGs, just send it to us.
And if you're not, start. So thank you, everybody, for listening, and until next time, stay safe, stand watch, and get a full rest.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.